Hello, hello, hello. This is CITR 101.9 FM, and you're listening to The Real World. The Real World is the UBC Film Society's radio segment here at CITR. I don't know how many years the show has been going for, but it's my second year hosting the show. I'm Lily Groh. I'm joined by a very special guest. Let me get you on. This is Emma. Say hello.
Hello, I'm Emma.
Want to say a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a first-year student here at UBC and the junior radio liaison for the Film Society.
Welcome on board, Emma. I'm so excited to have you here because I was radio liaison junior last year. Wow. And so it's a great kind of be on the other side of the table for one.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
And have you here with me. So yeah. The Real World, we talk about everything film related. We're going to have tons of episodes this year. This show is an every other Thursday, 4 to 5 segment. This is actually our first episode back since April. And we've got obviously some more coming at you in the next little while. But yeah, we're very excited to be back after our summer hiatus. And today we're going to talk about a couple different things, but mostly we're going to just chat about mine and Emma's kind of recap of our film festival experiences. I was at VIFF in October, and then you were in Calgary, right?
Yeah, I was at SIFF in like October as well.
So we had some crossover of the films that we saw at these film festivals, but we're going to just kind of chat about a couple of the films we saw, recap our experiences at the festival, and we'll have another episode about like a VIFF part 2 in 2 weeks. So not next Thursday, but the Thursday after that. And that will kind of conclude our series covering film festivals, SIFF and VIFF. But we're going to kick it off with just an ad break. So we'll get that going. And then when we get back, Emma and I will continue with The Real World, talking about SIFF and VIFF today. So,
hey, are you interested in radio? Passionate about gender issues? Want to be an active part of your community? Then join the wave and become part of CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective. Our show Intersections airs every 4 weeks, and we want your voice. We are all about empowering everyone and giving you the chance to speak your mind. There's no experience necessary. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, or email us at genderempowerment@citr.ca.
Do you love to read, but your friends and family are tired of you droning on and on about your latest book? Well, forget them, because you have me now. Hi, I'm Randy from Dog-Eared Radio Book Club, a book club coming to you through the airwaves from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. every 2 weeks on Tuesday evenings on CITR 101.9 FM. Tune in to hear the rambling thoughts of a fellow reader that are factually supported by my co-host of the week. Follow the show on Instagram at Dog-Eared Radio Book Club to find out about our next read.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
MRG presents Garrett T. Willie at the Wise Hall, performing his debut album, Same Pain. This 23-year-old from Kingcome Inlet offers the world something it has genuinely been missing for a while, a contemporary take on hardscrabble blues and the purest, rawest rock and roll. Don't miss Garrett T. Willie's show at the Wise Hall on December 2nd, and be sure to catch his in-studio performance and interview on Noise Complaint by CITR 101.9, also on December 2nd.
All right. That was just a little ad break. If you missed our first little intro, just a little reminder, you are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. I'm Lily, and I'm joined by...
This is Emma.
And we're going to talk about first... Well, I'm going to talk about a movie that I saw at VIFF this year. Tell Emma a bit about it. I don't think we've talked about it yet. It's called All Ears. Did I mention it to you yet?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It was my favorite movie of the festival. And I don't know if, like, part of the reason it became my favorite was just, like, the experience of how it happened. But I was leaving. What happened was I had a sense that I wanted to see more than one movie that day.
Yeah.
But I hadn't bought a ticket to a second. I was at the Old Oak. Have you heard of that one?
Haven't.
And I was seeing it at the Playhouse, I think. And by the time it came to an end, I was disappointed with it, really. And we're not talking about the Old Oak today. But once that movie ended, I was just like, I don't know if I got what I wanted out of today.
Yeah.
I think I need to see like one more film. I don't know what it's going to be. And I knew that Juan, shout out Juan if you're listening. Juan was the host of The Real World last year. He was working at International Village, that location of the Vancouver International Film Festival. So I just basically went online. I saw what was playing that night at International Village. Have you been to International Village Mall, Emma?
I have not. I've been like barely off of UBC's campus.
Don't go there. I loved this movie and the theater was cool, but I was so creeped out by that place. I've never been in this mall. It's literally like an abandoned mall. Like, someone explain what International Village is doing, because it's just kind of like this abandoned, like stuck in the 90s pastel mall with like all the shops are kind of closed, but if you go up three levels there's the movie theater.
Yeah.
But like the shops seem very like not running. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was really creeped out, and so I was like, maybe this was a bad choice to go here at whatever it was, like 8 o'clock. But what I mean to say is that I think it was meant to be. Like, all of these factors leading up to getting into International Village, whatever that place is, led me to All Ears, which is a film directed by, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this right, but Leo Jian. I'm sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly. I tried to search it up. But that's who the film was directed by. It's filmed in Beijing, China. And it basically, the director, what is really cool about this is they had like a little film that they had... explaining, the director couldn't be there for the festival, but she sent in a video of herself just kind of doing like a preface of the film, I guess. And so she explained a little bit about why she made it, which is always such a special thing, because you're going to take whatever you want out of the film that you see. But to have that going into it, I got so much more out of the message because she explained why she made it before. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of said that it was a summary of her life. So it wasn't like an autobiography in the typical way of like the character was like named after her and things like that. But once she had explained it and then I saw the film, I started to like see the parallels of, she's obviously a director, but this was her film that brought her back into directing after a 10-year gap. So she had like two feature films a while ago, took a massive break from directing, explained that she was feeling a bit lost in her art and things like that, and this film was her answer, getting back into her creative groove and things like that. And what is so cool is the main character of the film isn't a director but a screenwriter. And he's like in this rut, basically. He's not writing, he's not using screenwriting as like a creative outlet that he usually would, and he's taking a break from that. And by the end of the film, like, if you're listening to this, don't complain about spoilers. I'm going to try really hard not to spoil anything, but like, there might be some spoilers. I'm really bad at not spoiling, but by the end, the main character like circles back to what he loves, and that's screenwriting. And so you can just see like how much emotion and how deep the director dug into how she was feeling about coming back to film after taking that break, but through the character who comes back to writing.
Oh.
So I definitely recommend you watch it. It's got a big focus on what the director called finding ordinary, like as an eternal flame, which I think is really beautiful because it's kind of like slice of life, like just trying to find what is so amazing in ordinary everyday activities. So basically just overall what the film was about, we've got the screenwriter isn't screenwriting anymore and they're kind of lost, and where they're using their writing is by writing eulogies. So that's like an interesting turn, and cool. It like creates this kind of really sad, like dramatic setting to where he is in his life, showing that in between stage of he's not like as youthful as he used to be in his screenwriting courses, and he's not at the end where he like finds his passion again. He's just in the middle and he's writing, but he's writing about people who have passed away, which is obviously just so heavy in itself. But it just kind of goes through his day to day, and he is talking to the people, like he becomes this outlet for people who their loved ones have passed away and they just need someone to talk to. And he does something really special in like he wants to write something really personal about them.
Yeah.
And so these people who have passed away like somehow become like characters that he writes about, the same way that he would have written about characters in films that he was writing for, I guess. And obviously he becomes a really popular eulogy writer. I don't know if that's like a thing, but he's like pretty sought after because he puts so much into writing really, really beautiful messages about people's loved ones, which like you can imagine if someone you loved passed away, like you want their legacy to really represent them and you want someone to write about it who is going to put that effort in. And so he has these phone calls and he meets up with people and they kind of just spill their guts to him. And what you might get from the title and what I am like always thinking about after seeing the movie is all ears. Like that's what he was. He sat there and he listened, which is such an amazing skill. Yeah. Everyone needs to be a good listener, but he, especially in a time like that where people just needed someone to talk to, they needed someone to explain what they were going through and explain, I guess, like the story of their loved ones who have passed. And he just listens and he connects to these what become his characters that he writes about through listening. And that's where like these other kind of artistic factors in the film come in, of sound, of he'll kind of be thinking about these people and writing their eulogies, and you can hear sound effects from the stories that were told about them come in. So there'll be like wind chimes if something related to that person was about wind, like the story that their mother told him was related to wind, or you'll hear like train tracks because there were trains in the story, or you hear like ice breaking. And so it becomes this really cool connection that puts him into the reality of his characters when he's like writing them. And I don't write stories or screenplays or anything like that, but you can imagine like you have to put yourself into the world of the people that you're creating. And so that's one really cool way that the film links with sound, which I don't know. Sound is feels like to me something that I neglect a little bit too much when I'm watching films.
Yeah.
You're taking the same film course I took though last year, right? And there's like a unit on sound, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And so I feel like it's something that I need to start paying more attention to, because once I started seeing sound as like the subtle link for him, like so much more came together for me.
I feel like I only notice sound when like it's like absent, like
other than that, yeah, yeah,
and it's so important. Like it just totally changes the entire tone of the movie.
Absolutely. I need to think about it more often. Like obviously music is a big part, but just like little sound effects, once I realized one, then all of them, because they sound so natural, they sound so like a part of it, which is obviously the point. They're not supposed to like take you out of the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed that part of it. And then the part about The Ordinary is like, do you like slice of life cinema?
I am a fan of slice of life.
Just kind of slower pace.
Yeah, just, you know, sitting down watching a nice slice of life movie. It's a good break sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I felt like during this, especially after my long day and being stuck at International Village. Like, I needed that little slice of life thing. And part of how they did that, I think, was just like not neglecting such ordinary things of, yeah, he has this job and he's finding himself, he's discovering himself, kind of bigger like concepts of life, but also he has to make himself dinner, he has to do his laundry, he has to make sure he drinks enough water each day, he has to bike from place to place, and that is not left out, that is not forgotten, and that's not neglected in this film. They'll have like one long scene of him taking such care making his dinner or doing his laundry. There's so many little clips of him doing his laundry. And I was like, yeah, because those things aren't just not happening. And of course, they would include it because such like an important message, like I said at the beginning, was the director really wanting to emphasize the importance of the day to day and of the ordinary. So that was really special to me.
That sounds like really kind of unique, like if you think about it, like sort of a eulogy, like you're never going to be mentioning, oh, the ordinary stuff that everyone kind of did. So like contrasting the two, that seems like it sends a really interesting sort of picture.
Definitely, because yeah, in a eulogy, like they're going to include their accomplishments and their awards and things like that. But maybe like what he did tie in was more day to day, like who were these people day to day? Like,
yeah.
Were they just kind to people they see on the street? Because that was another thing that the director said, was capturing what simple things like kindness are in a city like Beijing, like a massive mega city with so much going on, everyone caught up in their own life, like in any city, and like what it is to do something as simple as like an act of kindness, like feeding a cat on the street is like a random storyline. Mm-hmm. That's not so random because those are little ordinary things that are so important to this character. Like this is so sad, but like once he passes away, obviously he's done these amazing things, he's like written movies and he's written these eulogies, but he also was like the type of person to feed a cat on the street, and he was the type of person to like help someone out when they asked for it and let them stay over and things like that. So I don't know exactly, that's a really good point of maybe a typical eulogy would have listed a couple major accomplishments and neglected the minor. But I really do wonder if maybe some of his tied in The Ordinary.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a very personal sort of story. Just from, like, what I've heard, it sounds really, like, poignant sort of portrait of the director.
Yeah, definitely. Which is, obviously, the story was so touching to me, but then to realize, like, after and connect it back to this really feels like her story, like the parallels of what she was explaining of coming back to director and feeling so lost in the middle, at that middle stage of life, and feeling like you're too old for this or too young for that, or feeling expired. There was kind of this imagery about being expired or being past your best before date and stuff, with like the food that he would eat or the tea he was drinking, stuff like that. But one line that really stuck out to me was at the very end when it was written or said, but I remember writing it down, was just saying, just so you know, you can be the lead, which is so like, it sounds like, oh, everyone's the main character, but in such less like a, this feels much more in a touching way of like even the lead character appreciates the little, like, is appreciating the little things in life more towards the end. But
just how much goes like unnoticed in our day-to-day lives, like how many, I guess, acts of kindness that we don't know other people have done that just, well, might not be remembered by anyone but the people who received the act of kindness, I guess.
And so that's what I just really like that they included, because only so many movies, unless they're like explicitly slice of life, like show those little things, like they just kind of it's a lot more energy to watch mm-hmm. when they're not like taking those breaks. Like the character yeah. has to take breaks. Mm-hmm. That's only natural. And it is kind of like a break for the viewer when they're just sitting eating their apple for like a minute straight or sitting and making dinner for themselves. So that was the VIF experience that I needed after my long day. And yeah, it was my favorite experience at the festival. It was my favorite movie. It was the most recent movie. You know those times? I don't know if you do know those times, but like there are only so many movies that I come home from and I like can't think of anything else. Yeah. And I sit down and I open my notes app. Mm-hmm. I think I have like only a handful of those in my notes.
Oh yeah. Just really consumes you for like a day and just like this is a part of me now
and I need to write it down. Yeah. Do you have that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's like so many movies where I just like come back from the theater and just had to like sit by myself in a dark room for a bit and just like think about what I saw and just kind of work through everything that was like presented to me, I guess.
Yeah, and this was just one of those for me. And like, yeah, there'll be those ones that like, oh my god, that was a crazy experience. Mm-hmm. How did the visual effects person do this? And how did I need to like give it a 5-star letterbox review and things like that. But this was like even separate from that of like, it was prolonged. Like it wasn't just like, whoa, that looked amazing and I'm caught up in it for 5 minutes. But I really had to sit down and just like write down all the things I felt about it.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just what you need. If you're not some like famous, like there's nothing extraordinary happening in your life. Mm-hmm. Of it felt like personal validation of being ordinary and being special mm-hmm. are not separate things, which I feel like is a big distinction that people, I don't know, like you feel like, oh, because you're doing day-to-day things, there's nothing special about it.
Yeah.
But to me, what I got out of it is that those things don't contradict. He was doing something so incredible and so special for so many people, but also living what some would say is a completely ordinary life.
Yeah. Like there's like magic kind of in the mundane and the ordinary.
Yeah. So I'm a sucker for like messages like that. That's like, I need to start living by that and appreciating the little things in life. Yeah. It reminds me of how I felt after the first time I saw About Time.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't, I don't think.
I've been meaning to see it for so long and it is just like another one. Or it's, like, not so similar to this movie. Don't get it twisted. That's not what I'm saying. But the same message of after you leave and you're just like, I need to appreciate the little things a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's, like, listening into those small little sounds in the background of the movie. It's, like, mm-hmm. the same thing in life, listening to those small little sounds. Like, when people are, like, just listen to the sound of the wind, like, day to day. Like, you don't notice them because they become, like, white noise in your day.
Yeah.
But all these things are going around you.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, for me, like a similar experience, I guess, is when you kind of wake up early enough and hear the bird song, you're like, wow.
Wow. This actually happens every day, but like, I either don't notice it or I sleep through it.
Exactly. It's like, just like a little moment of like, this is so magical.
Yeah. That's so true. Anyway, I feel inspired. Hope you feel inspired too, Emma.
Oh, yeah. I'm inspired.
So inspired.
Listen to the wind for a bit.
Yeah. Listen to the wind. Just take a second. You can do that now, or you can listen to this song I'm going to play. And this doesn't really relate to the film because I couldn't find the score of it, actually. But I'm going to play a song from the soundtrack of a movie that is screening tonight at The Norm. If you don't know what The Norm is, go to UBC Film Society's Instagram, figure out where it is, come watch After Sun. And The Beginners are playing tonight. So I'm going to play one of just the main songs from the After Sun score. I adore this movie. Hopefully we get a chance to, I don't know if we'll find a way to squeeze it in so we can talk about it. Do you like it as well, Emma?
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard the score and it's just like from the reaction online, I know it would take me like 3 to 7 business days to recover.
Yeah.
So I've been saving that one for
rainy okay. day. Save it for when your emotions can actually handle it.
Yeah.
Would be a good recommendation. But yeah, come check out our double feature at The Norm tonight, and that's why you're going to hear One Without is what it's called, from the artist Oliver Coates. Hopefully I pronounced that right. From After Sun. So yeah, here you are.
Thank you.
All right, that was One Without from Aftersun's Score. Again, this is The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM. And tonight, the UBC Film Society is screening Aftersun and Beginners. So please turn out. It's the best deal on campus ever, ever, ever. And this is the UBC Film Society's radio show. So we just finished talking about my favorite film that I saw at VIFF this year. And we're going to move on to another film that I saw at VIFF, and Emma, you saw at SIFF, right?
Yeah.
So this was Seven Veils. Mm-hmm. Want to give just like your first impressions. What did you think walking out of the theater? Has it grown on you?
Honestly, I think definitely upon reflection, it definitely got better the more I thought about it. So my first walked out was kind of, I knew there was like symbolism there, but I just couldn't quite figure it out. And I had to sit with it for a while to kind of puzzle through everything that the director was trying to say.
Yeah.
And this was like the first film I'd seen from Adam Egoyan. So it was kind of just going in blind. But it was really a pleasant surprise, honestly. Any sort of film that centers around like art or theater, I find I tend to be sort of drawn towards. So this was, yeah, really interesting sort of look into, I guess, this opera, Salem, which I'd never really heard of before this. And it's very well known, but I just, yeah, I hadn't heard of it. So I think, yeah, it was honestly just such a well done film, and how he blended like all these different aspects of, like, I know he used some of the footage he shot from when he like directed the opera, I believe.
Yeah.
And that was like a really cool touch, and how he integrated that into the movie, because it felt very natural. I thought that was like really well done.
I was in the same situation with you of I didn't really know what I was getting into. Yeah. I clicked on the movie because it's just like a massive picture of Amanda Seyfried's face. Yeah. And I was like, okay, so true. Like, I want to see this.
Exactly. Yeah.
I haven't seen any other Adam Egoyan. Adam Egoyan is a Canadian director. Yeah. He's done Exotica and a number of other films that we haven't seen, but we will now.
Yeah.
But so this is Seven Veils, which, like Emma started to introduce for you, from what I've heard, is he discovered like the character that Amanda Seyfried, literally like my clickbait, he started to write and or create her character when he found out that Salome, this opera that the film kind of centers around, was being remounted after Adam Egoyan directed that opera in 1996, and then he directed it again in like 2022-2023 year. So he's remounting the opera. He comes up with this character who's also remounting the same opera, also for the Canadian Opera Company. Both of them, him and his character, are doing this in Toronto at the Four Seasons Center for the Performing Arts. Like, it's shot in the same place that he actually is directing the opera. Anyway, there's a lot of layers there. So this is a movie about opera. If you're not into opera, still see it. Are you into opera?
I'm not. This is like the first time I've really engaged with it.
Okay, me too.
Capacity. It was like, yeah, kind of a, it was a pleasant surprise. Like, I really enjoyed kind of seeing how it was happening, like everything that went into creating this opera.
Yeah, and what makes it even more authentic is that the opera singers that Amanda Seyfried's character Janine is directing are the actual opera singers that Egoyan was directing. Like, they're not actors.
Oh, yeah.
As far as I know. They're actual, like, artists who, opera singers, I guess, who've done, like, a number of operas. Like, I looked into it, and they all have, like, a big history. Like, they're probably very renowned, and I just don't know their names because I'm not part of that little niche. But, so the main guy, so John the Baptist and John the Baptist and then the main girl, I forget her name right now.
Salome?
Oh, Salome, is her name literally Salome?
I think so.
Okay, anyway, John the Baptist and Salome, the people who are singing their parts in the film are the actual singers who Egoyan was directing when he was remounting the opera.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's super interesting.
Yeah, well, I think I only really found that out because after I saw it at VIFF, he was there. Like, he did a Q&A, Adam Egoyan. So he, like, talked a little bit about, like, what it's like to work, I guess, with people who their roots are not in acting. Which it makes sense. Like, they have to sing all the opera. So it's either you find someone who's an incredible actor and also incredible at opera singing, or you just kind of turn one into the other.
Yeah. And I think, especially considering they weren't, like, kind of the focus of the film, like, it was very much Janine and her story and, like, her, like, discovering and finding out more stuff about herself through the opera. I think it's definitely, like, an interesting choice to bring in the opera singers as the actors rather than the actors as the opera singers.
Yes.
Which I think definitely worked in his favor.
Yeah, definitely. They did a great job. Oh, and that's the other thing. It's like, I found that out, I guess, maybe we weren't paying much attention to them because we're so focused on Janine freaking out over each part of the opera that you don't really think too much about their acting. But nothing noticeable for me that I was like, they must not be actors.
Yeah, like, nothing like tipped me off.
No,
like,
wow, not at all.
These guys can sing. That was kind of like as far as it went for me, but it's really well done. Yeah.
But yeah, I was struggling after because I was like, I just don't, I wasn't understanding all of the layers of the origin of Salome. Like, I'd never heard of Salome as an opera itself, but like, obviously it seemed really real.
Yeah.
And then when he talked about it, he referred to it just like, oh yeah, that's the opera. And I was like, expand on that a bit more. I have no idea what you're talking about. But it's based on Oscar Wilde's play from 1891, the French play. And then it was adapted by Richard Strauss into the opera itself, Salome. And now it's being performed. Obviously, like, it was performed a bunch. And like I said, Adam McGoyan directed it, the opera, in 1996. Now he's doing it again. And then the character is also remounting it. So it's just like adapting and adapting and adapting so many times over.
Oh, it's just absolutely layers upon layers of adaption. I don't know, like, what?
Yeah. And then in that, all I can think about are layers, which I guess, like, they call it seven veils. And so, like, that image is already in my head of the layers of the origin of the story that I'd never heard of John the Baptist, this, like, biblical figure.
Yeah.
And then the opera itself. And then there's these layers in the film, which I want to hear, like, what you think about those. But it's, like, about this woman, Janine, dealing with all these men around her. And they're adding these different layers to her life, men of her past, men of her present, and these resurfacing emotions when she takes on the remounting of this opera.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, like, really interesting in how it's sort of unveiled itself, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it starts off pretty standard, like, oh, she's here to direct this play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as the opera sort of starts to get more and more complex with, like, her sort of personal life. It was really interesting how the two kind of became one near the end. Like, it was like Janine is Salome almost in a way. It was really interesting how they just kind of moved together. Thought it was like just, and the use of like images from Janine's childhood, like in the opera, were really powerful. I found, like, really well done.
So that's the other thing of, like, no spoilers, but kind of spoilers. Yeah. Like, this is not a spoiler, but the way that, obviously, I just explained the entire history of Salome and where it came from, but of Janine's role in what she's now remounting of her old kind of mentor, who we discover, like, his role in her past. And it's a lot, like, rooted in her trauma, like, where she is today. And that kind of is revealed throughout in a really cool way through flashbacks and old kind of looks like camcorder footage from her childhood. And then you find that these stories from her childhood begin to, like, wind their way into the opera itself.
Yeah.
And so our discovery as the audience is, like, how they found their way there and how traumatizing. All I can think about is, like, how the trauma of directing this opera that is now kind of telling the story of her life because her past mentor added it to his production, basically took advantage of her childhood stories and wound them into Salome, used her stories as, like, inspiration for some of the images and the art that he displays in his version of Salome. And then so when she's remounting it kind of in his honor, her past traumas are still kind of tied into it because he appropriated them from her in the first place.
Yeah. I know, it's, like, super, like, interesting how she kind of goes about facing these and adding, like how she tries to add her own personal touch to these operas.
Yeah.
And she's often like rebuffed. Like yes. They don't want anything changed mm-hmm. from what her mentor did. And it's just really interesting to see how she tries to navigate that, like what little victory she can have.
Which is very interesting commentary, like on any kind of art show business type situation of, like adding your own spin to something and how production companies, like this one's the Canadian Opera Company or whatever, respond to wanting to add your own artistic touch, which then just comes back to like, Adam McGoin was actually doing that. And so it just makes you wonder, like, what was he wanting to twist mm-hmm. in the production of Salome? That was he inspired to write kind of Amanda Seyfried's character keep getting denied by the production company, saying like, you can't really add that. There's so much pressure to stay true to the original form. And we see that in film too, of like how upset people get when like a remake doesn't rank up to what they imagine it should be.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely like so much pressure just like to kind of preserve this image, I guess, that people want is like, oh, this is a thing that exists and it should be kept as such. But then someone tries to put a spin on it, which is often what art is just building off of other people's works to create something that's yours. And how often we see that sort of rebuffed or just like rejected outright, which is happens a lot in this film.
And that's what he said in like an interview I watched with him, and maybe he talked about it in the Q&A that I was there for, but of the pressure he felt to kind of stay true to what he did in 1996. But what he said was this production of Salome that he was doing in 2023, we're not in 1996 anymore. There's a lot, like artists have new thoughts after that many years have passed. Audience have new perspectives. And he kind of explained that he felt a lot of pressure to keep it true to itself. Mm-hmm. But I guess how you grapple with that and staying true to the story, but also adding new things. And you can see the pressure he must have felt through her character. And I think Janine, like, or I guess it was Amanda Seyfried's like delivery of her frustration with the people above her, like the people in power.
No, it was like she was just so excellent in this. I haven't really seen her in any serious roles.
I was thinking the same thing,
Which is, I hope she gets more in the future because this was just above and beyond. Like, her facial expressions are out of this world. The way she acts, just like, even with just her eyes, is so, it's amazing.
Her eyes are definitely like amazing. You can't keep your eyes off of hers because she's doing so much for you. Like, she really embodied the role, I guess, and I can only imagine it would help if the director, like the person directing you, has like felt all of these same things, like because they're doing the same thing you are, but exploring. I think what he said was he didn't have mobility to make changes, artistic changes that he wanted to his opera, and creating her character, who really aggressively campaign to make changes, was like liberating for him because he didn't feel like he actually could, but her character really put in the effort to make changes to the art.
Like, it's very apparent how personal this opera is to like both Janine and Ogoyen. There's just like so many emotions behind it that it's like, I feel so strongly about this now that I didn't even know it existed before. And it's like, it feels very familiar almost. And even like having gone in not knowing the opera, it never feels isolating. Like, you aren't expected to go in with the knowledge of what this opera is. Like, it's kind of what you need to know is revealed to you, and you can kind of piece it together from there, which is kind of how the whole movie operates, honestly.
Absolutely, yeah. Another thing, I wonder if you were thinking about this too, of some of the imagery that we get. There's a lot of stuff with shadows and reflections.
No, that was really interesting. Is that throughout? It's like, honestly, it felt very kind of German expressionist almost in a way, just like this big exaggeration of the shadows and stuff. And I thought it was a really cool choice, I thought, to work with that.
Yeah, that's how kind of it opens up with, there's like one of those first scenes of her walking into the room and they're kind of experimenting a bit with the projecting. So like part of the opera that she produced, and he said everything that we saw in the opera, like the projection, and there's like these big lips that get projected that are painted kind of, and the bowl and the blood and all the props, all of those things actually happen in his remounting of it. Like, those are real, those are from the set, these are they were actually shown in Toronto in like early 2023. I think his remounting took place. But when she walks in and they're showing all those projections and you see her kind of against this shadow that you later find out is her.
Yeah.
Because the story that is twisted into Salome is the story of her childhood that her past mentor kind of took from her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a cool way that I think like it plays with memory.
Oh yeah.
All of these images of reflection, things coming back, resurfacing later in life, art reflecting mm-hmm. reality and reality reflecting art, which yeah. is something we always learn about. That's like what it is.
Yeah, it's definitely like the divide between like, yeah, the personal and the artistic and like how they all kind of blur together in the end.
Yeah.
The opera is Janine by the end of it. And it's interesting to see how she's kind of, she's always like just a part of the opera and she just gets more and more involved as it goes on. It's like she's kind of taking like what was taken from her, she's taking it back in
yeah. a way. Yeah, which is really amazing to watch because mm-hmm. once you have the background of all of her traumas,
yeah,
it's definitely something that she would want to reclaim. And then it becomes this empowering thing because there are other traumas she's had with men in the past, like with her family,
yeah.
that are addressed. That's like a kind of another plot line that's going on. And by the end, she's literally painted over and scratched out that part of her life, which
yeah.
you've seen or you will see when you go see this movie. Her finding ways, whether through her art or through just taking actions in her personal life with her family, her husband, her relationship with her dad, and actually just like physically removing them
yeah.
and taking power again.
That was really like, I feel like going in, I had no idea what sort of a message this film would be trying to send.
Mm-hmm.
So, like after watching, I thought it was definitely, it was really, like really complex. It was really well thought out. Like it's
yeah.
clearly, yeah, very personal. It was like passion project
yes.
for the director.
Clearly, yeah. I definitely, once you get the background, it's so cool to see how it is a passion project. That's mm-hmm. a good way of putting it. And there's so many other things going on that like we won't even get the chance to talk about, but all of the commentary that after knowing that he is directing the same opera as Janine, you understand why he wants to put it in. So like we yeah. said, the commentary about being just kind of turned down by the production mm-hmm. company, like saying keep it the same, or like her writer's notes of how they don't really want to like mm-hmm. use her directive, I forget what they're called, do you know what I'm talking about, of like her creative notes on
yeah.
the scenes,
like yeah,
they didn't like want to show them or publish them, and they're just mm-hmm. kind of like, oh, you could make a blog so people could yeah. read your blog if they wanted to,
yeah, like the director's statement,
yeah,
so, yeah. And that was also really interesting, I thought, how they used her blog as kind of like an internal monologue,
yeah,
like that was a really cool way of delivering the narration. It still felt sort of natural and didn't feel like you were like watching a movie, she wasn't talking to you, it's just like
she was yeah
yeah
just her character talking and explaining the choices that she was making. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of commentary of the redirection in show business of like, okay, like we're not gonna show this here because it's not true to the original,
yeah.
but you can have this outlet.
Exactly.
And then there's the other commentary on abuse
mm-hmm.
in like taking advantage in this industry of yeah. theater and film and opera, mm-hmm. I guess, because there's like a situation of assault
mm-hmm.
in one of the scenes and how companies and react to this and deal yeah. with it because they're trying to protect their name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just like put above everything else.
Yeah,
the people are just kind of swept under the rug. It is like all about maintaining the image.
Yeah, the image and not letting the opera go to fail, mm-hmm. even though they're like, oh, the opera's coming out soon, like we can't sacrifice it, we can't do anything that will
yeah.
like ruin its remounting. We want people to come. And that's put so much more above a situation that had happened like a couple weeks ago mm-hmm. of sexual assault in the production process.
Yeah.
So that's like another part that comes into play that, you know, makes you think of where these stories might have come from Agoyan, like working in both film and theater, like opera
mm-hmm.
has probably heard a lot of stories like that, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And it must have been important to him maybe to tie those in, even though they felt, now that I'm looking back on it, like I really forgot about those kind of sub
yeah.
story lines that were going on. But I can imagine that it would almost feel like a disservice to make a film about an opera, like your two areas of expertise, like opera and film, and just not include all of these things and injustices that are happening in those industries.
Yeah. Like, it does feel like it's barely scratched the surface, but it was, I think, a good choice to have that included in there.
Yeah. It felt like I wanted it to go more in depth because, like you said, it did scratch the surface. It felt like it was taking time away from the main stuff, but not giving enough attention. But I do think I would rather it there than not be there at all.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. So overall, I really liked Seven Veils.
Yeah.
It ranked high on my experience, and it didn't, like, fall off my radar. Some of the films I came out of were just like, oh, that was amazing, but then it just kind of fell off. I still, I think about this one.
Same for me. Like, some of the ones I was looking through, like, my Letterboxd, and it's like, I don't remember seeing most of these until I've, like, looked back on them, but I do think about this one, like, fairly frequently.
Well, we're going to take another little musical break, and I thought about playing a song from the opera, but if you haven't seen the film and you haven't seen the opera, it's, like, intense. Like, I don't know if we mentioned the fact that, like, it's, like, gory opera. Like, I was shocked.
What's they call it, like, the Bible's first sex crime or something like
that?
Yeah. It's, like, the tagline, and it's a lot,
It's a lot to take in. There's blood and there's death, and the sound of opera to me, just as someone who doesn't normally listen to it, feels aggressive because of just it's loud. Very sophisticated point of view, I know. But it's not that it wasn't amazing and the voices aren't fantastic, because you do get to hear them sing. But I'm not going to play a song from it, and you should go listen to it on your own time. I'm going to play something from Beginners, which is the other film that is showing tonight. This is called Stardust. So, like I said, at the Norm tonight, we're playing After Sun and Beginners. Definitely show up. I'll get this song going, and then we'll just recap our episode. Thank you for listening, and here you are.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you when our love was new. And each kiss an inspiration. Oh, but that was long ago. Now my consolation is in the stardust of a song beside a garden wall. When stars are bright, you are in my arms. The night Nightingale tells his fairy tale of paradise where roses grew. Though I dream in vain, in my heart it will remain my stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain. My stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain.
All right, that was Stardust from the original motion picture soundtrack of Beginners, which is playing tonight. So this past hour, you've been listening to Lily and
Emma.
And we are part of the UBC Film Society. It's a great club. Find ways to get involved if you check out UBC Film Society on Instagram. And this was The Real World, which is our segment, which again will be every other Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. Not next Thursday, but the Thursday after that, we will have another episode, and it will be a continuation of VIF. On that episode, I will be joined by Juan, who was last year's Film Society radio liaison, so a familiar voice. Fernando, which is the club's film liaison. He picks all of the films that we show. He chose to screen After Sun and Beginners tonight, which I've mentioned. And my dad, Adam, was also on the episode. So you can listen to that in 2 weeks' time. We're going to cover a couple more movies that we saw at VIF. It was a great festival season. Emma was at SIFF.
Yep.
Lots of great screenings.
Lots of great screenings.
And you can tune in 2 weeks to listen to some reviews about Priscilla, we discussed, and another film called The Teacher's Lounge. But yeah, that's it for us today. We will be back on in a couple weeks and you can hear us then. Thank you for listening. Any parting thoughts?
Go see After Sun and Beginners tonight.
Yeah.
Play at the Norm.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.